Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, a weekly podcast for BJJ enthusiasts who are striving to succeed both on and off the mats. This podcast is brought to you by Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. And here are your hosts on the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui.
Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life podcast. This is episode number 150.
Yo, moving along.
That sounds impressive. 150 episodes.
Yeah, that has a nice ring to it.
It does.
You know,
it does.
Never thought about the numbers when we started podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, never thought about, oh, let's get to 100 or 200.
Yeah.
I think that's just the power of compound interest, the power of discipline.
Yeah.
You know, you just showing up every day, right?
Yeah.
That's what they say about getting your black belt. Just keep showing up.
Keep showing
up. There's some truth to that. What do you think? You think there's some truth to that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, I think about all the people I've known through jiu-jitsu, and most of them have quit. Most of them quit around blue belt. That's usually the rule of thumb, is like 90% of people quit after blue belt. So it's really just who's left. It's that Chris Howard.
Have you ever seen anyone who's just kept showing up, and in 10 years, you're still like, ugh, do not give that person a black belt.
There's a few, and there's a few ended up getting their black belt where you're like, okay, that's sort of a black belt in effort more than anything. But I'm sure people said that about me. So, you know what I mean? Like, there's levels of everything. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys where,
100%.
You know, if I went to a competition school, I would be the worst person on the mat. So they'd say that about me. But they probably don't have a podcast, so I could talk smack about them, and they couldn't talk back. So there we go. And if they did, then maybe I got more money than them. So boom.
You know, I was reading something, man. I am real big into the Naval Ravikant stuff right now. And it just really resonates with me because of not only is he an entrepreneur, but for me, he's a philosopher. But he says something about games, right? And he's basically saying how there's a lot of different games that you can play. Some people play a status game. Some people play the money game.
Yeah.
And a couple of things that I've been thinking about, right? Like, it's okay. So what Naval says is the way you win the game is remove yourself from the game. Just don't play the game, right?
Okay.
There's a lot of truth to that. Like, it's so profound for me. But at the same time, I was kind of driving along and thinking about some things. And what I've come to conclude for now, for myself, is that it's okay to play the game as long as you enjoy playing the game.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. The moment you stop enjoying playing the game, the way you win is just stop playing it altogether. Just, you know, remove yourself from that equation.
Yeah.
But like, business is nothing more than sport to me. It really is a game. I don't think about the money or anything like that. And I enjoy that game, so I continue to play it. But I don't know why we started talking about that.
Well, it makes sense.
I think I just brought it up randomly.
No.
Maybe you were talking, because you were talking about competition.
Yeah. And I mean, that's
and we're not like playing the competition game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, through most of sports, people's competitive lifetime is a lot shorter than the time they're doing the actual sport, for the most part. I mean, that's what's interesting about things like something like jiu-jitsu, is that most people really don't compete at all, ever. I'd say 90% of the people I've met have never competed, and maybe 95% have competed a few times. And then there's the 5% that's what they do. You know, like when we talk to Calum, where it's like everything is about, oh, I got another competition coming up. But he's rare, especially because he's, you know, in his 40s. That's very rare for the most part. So what's interesting about it is you have something that's still competitive in the way that it's practiced, but most of the people that are doing it are not competing. So then it's like, well, how do you stay motivated? And there's some people that only get motivated through competition. I had a buddy when I was coming through the ranks who was very competitive and did very well. He won the Mundials at blue belt in like 1998, when it was like, you know, he had like 12 matches or something like that to win. I mean, there was a ton of people in his division. And his idea was, he's like, well, I can't get motivated to diet or work out or do anything unless I've got a competition. Like, that's the only way I'm motivated, is if I have that. Now, I mean, he's married, he's got kids, he hasn't competed in probably 10 or 15 years. So the motivation is different, but it's like people find sort of different motivations to sort of do the same thing, which would be train jiu-jitsu throughout their career in jiu-jitsu. Because if you're only competing for, let's say, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, that's usually about it for most people. Well, if you're doing it for like 30 years or 40 years, how else do you get motivated? And that's
where that's a great question. And that kind of goes right into what we want to talk about today is how do you keep your mind in the game and how do you keep your motivation?
Yeah.
Specifically, you know, like if you suffer an injury in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that's, you know, that's where we've been lucky to be friends with Kevin, because he's somebody who has always kept the mindset of you always want to be training something. And, you know, he takes that to sticks and guns and knives and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, all different types of stand-up fighting, stand-up wrestling, wrestling against the wall, jiu-jitsu, like with the gi, without the gi, with strikes, without strikes, like really any sort of type of grappling or combat that you can think of, he's down to train. And what's so good about that is that, you know, when we meet people that are more specialists that want to do just kind of one thing, well, if they get injured, it's like, man, you really cannot train it. So it's like you're either training it, or if you get hurt, you're just not training at all. And to me, the problem with that is now you've got sort of negative momentum. You've got sort of stagnation. And stagnation has its own kind of momentum, just like movement has its own momentum. And the longer you're stagnant, the harder it is to get moving again. Versus if you sort of have the philosophy that we might have, which is that, okay, I you know, hurt my knee, so I can't grapple that much, but I can shadow box. I can really work on, you know, different strikes. Or, you know, when I hurt my right knee, I started really working on my kicks with my right leg, because I'm like, I can't plant the leg, but I can kick with it. So now I can start working this. So you always focus on what can I do versus what can't I do. And that, to me, it keeps your mind in the game. It keeps things interesting. It actually keeps you healthier, because I think that if you're just training jiu-jitsu on the ground, trying to submit the other guy the whole time, that's where I see a lot of the injuries. Those are the people that tend to be the most beat up. You know, we were just talking, Kevin is part cyborg, I think, because that guy is, he's never really hurt. And he's not a young guy, and he certainly doesn't have an easy life by any stretch of the imagination. But man, that guy is so durable. And I think because he keeps his head in the game, he listens to his body, and he trusts his intuition. Like, he's like, you know, I'm too beat up. My shoulders are too beat up from striking. I need to do this. Or my neck's too beat up from wrestling, so I need to work on my striking. Or, you know, like, it's always trying to find that balance. And you'll never find that balance, too. That's another thing. But
you know what's a big part of that, Carter, for me, and in terms of Kevin and his ability to stay healthy and listen to his body? I think a lot of it has to do, now that we're talking more about it in depth, with his lack of ego.
Yes.
Right? Because I think that we were having this conversation. I was saying that in my 20s, that it was necessary almost to not listen to what my body was telling me.
Yeah.
Because I had to find out what my limits were. So I had to push my body to the limits, but my body was at an age, in a stage that, you know, it was resilient and it was durable and it could recover quickly, right? And so there's something to be said about developing that mental fortitude and that discipline early on.
Yeah.
As I got older, I began to realize, look, my body's not going to recover, and playing this game of, you know, I'm tough and I got to tough through it, things only got worse, and I spent time out of training a lot longer. But when I look at that, I think that was a lot of ego. Me not being able to accept the fact that I can no longer do things exactly the same way I used to do them.
Yeah.
But the thing about that doesn't mean you can't do them anymore. It just means you can't do them the same way. And I think that's what Kevin is very good at understanding.
Yes. I think so too. And I think that it's weird, because it's almost like the sooner you accept the limitations, it's almost like the freer you become. Because within those limitations, there's so many things you can do. And we've talked about this with boxing, where, like, you have the limitations of four punches, but that allows so much creativity still, just given that structure. The limitations of not being able to train super hard all the time is good, because if your only goal is, like, just push harder, you know, people talk about, we train super hard over here. And it's like, well, okay, but how long can you realistically do that and still get better before eventually, you know, you have a race of, like, the limitations of your body and improvement? And sooner or later, the body's limitations are going to overtake improvement. It happens with everyone. But it's like the challenge is, can you gain skill without beating your body up anymore? And that's by having to be selective about all the things you do, about saying no to a lot of things, saying no to a lot of people who want to train with you, but their intentions are to kind of use you as a stepping stone. That all takes a certain discipline. That all takes accepting limitations. But ultimately, to me, it's very freeing, because now you can really focus on enjoyment, about keeping your sort of preserving your health, and still getting better. Because that's the other thing that I think with Kevin especially, that guy's always getting better. I mean, you look at him now versus 5 years ago, it's not even close. He's so much better now. And in a couple of years, he'll be so much better still. He's constantly improving. And I think that's the thing that people, they get tripped up on. They think when you start saying limitations and you can't train as hard or whatever, they automatically think that means, okay, you're going to get worse at this thing. And it's like, no, you're probably going to get better. Because a lot of the training that people do, it's like they're making themselves tougher, but they're not making themselves better. And sooner or later, you get tired of trying to make yourself tougher. You really do. Like, you run out of toughness, I think. Like, it's such a young man's thing of like, I'm the toughest guy or whatever. And at a certain point, you're like, I just don't care. But that doesn't mean that you can't get better. And that,
are you saying that at some point, eventually in life, you get to the point where you stop playing the game?
Stop playing the game. Exactly. And now I see, going through that mental exercise, now I see exactly what he's saying. Because if you're playing the game of like, okay, I'm going to be the toughest guy or do whatever, it's like, that's a very finite game that is run by young people. And you will see this in any sport. You look at anything and say, okay, who are the best people now? Jiu-jitsu, MMA, whatever you want to say. Okay, let's go back 5 years ago. For the most part, it's a totally different list. In 5 years from now, it's going to be a totally different list.
So if
that's your only thing, it's like, that's not going to last very long. And hopefully you don't plan on dying in the ring or in the cage. So you're going to live life after that. So what are you going to do afterwards? You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know. It's interesting, because something that would be looked at as a negative, I don't think is a negative, but you have to accept it first. You have to accept those limitations first.
So that's another thing that Naval talks about, is acceptance. Right. And that once you being satisfied with where you're at is happiness.
Yeah.
And being unsatisfied is oftentimes what leads to progress.
Yeah.
I think the problem that I see with martial artists, with combat athletes, is when you can't just come to terms with reality, and you don't accept the fact that your body can no longer do what it used to do. And the fact that you can't even look in the mirror and say that, because in your mind you're thinking, if I say that, if I admit to that, I am no longer the person I used to be. Yeah. I'm weak. It goes against everything that I was ever taught about being a warrior. So I cannot say that.
Yeah.
But that just means, in my opinion, that you're going to be living a very, very unhappy life for a very, very long time.
Yes.
Because you're trying to still accomplish things in the same manner that no longer work for your body and where you're at. And it's just science. It has nothing to do with your mind or your mental fortitude. It's just basic science. You're getting older.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. Because if you're defining your happiness or your way of success is that sort of young mentality, then yeah, you're going to, for the most part, most of us are going to be old, middle-aged and old, much, much longer than we're going to be young. So if your mentality is like the young way of doing it is happiness, then you're going to be miserable most of your life. And it's like, why?
Exactly.
Why? Because to me, it's, you can still get better at things. That's the thing that I don't think people understand, is that there's skill improvement. It may not lead to effectiveness. That's something else to think about too. Like, you know, we were talking about this guy that we've been training with, and he is very effective, even though I don't think he's necessarily more skilled than the people he's training with. But because he's young and a super good athlete and very tough and all that, he's going to be more effective. That's something that as an older person, you're just going to have to say, yeah, he's a young guy. He's got that effectiveness. But I'm still getting better and I'm still maybe more skilled. I just may not be more effective, but that's okay. You know, because there's a lot to be had with gaining that skill.
And you know, what's a good example of that is sometimes, you know, if you see an instructor, someone who's running his own academy.
Yeah.
And he's already in his, you know, early 50s, late 50s, maybe approaching 60s. And he has a student that taps him. Does that mean that the student is more skilled or knowledgeable?
Right.
And that's the thing. I think there's a lot of instructors out there and a lot of gym owners out there that they're afraid of being perceived that way. But I think that it's just a matter of, I don't know what it's a matter of, but I myself am educated enough to know that just because you tapped out that instructor, by no means does that equate to you being more skilled or more knowledgeable. You know, a perfect example was boxing, right? My coach was in his 50s, his 60s. Yeah, if we got into the ring, now he's a tough guy. I would never count him out. You know, he could always get one in and put me on my butt. But I don't think anybody expected him to be able to compete with me and knock me out. Exactly. Right? But I never I never then said, well, then if you can't knock me out, well, you can't be my coach. It doesn't work that way, right?
It's
it just
a weird
doesn't. I knew that all the everything that was of value to me was in his brain, right? Like he kept all the knowledge. He had all the knowledge, and I had no, you know, I was not living a fairy tale. Like, oh, I know more than this guy, right? So, I think that's an important thing for students in jiu-jitsu and and even instructors in jiu-jitsu that,
It's a very jiu-jitsu thing too. You don't see that, like you said, you don't see that in boxing. You know, you don't see that in wrestling. I mean, like you don't see like the 50-year-old wrestling coach thinking he's going to pin all his students. I mean, it's just, that's unrealistic. It doesn't equate that. You don't see it in boxing. You don't see it in really any other sport. You know, you don't see that in football. You don't see Bill Belichick like saying like, oh, put the pads on me, I'm going to slam you. I mean, like, no, it doesn't work that way. But for whatever reason in jiu-jitsu, it's this idea that, okay, you're the instructor, so you have to be able to tap out everybody always. And it's like, well, in some cases, yes, that's going to be the case. You know, when you have new students and you're still relatively young, that's fine. But like you said, if you're somebody in your 50s and you're dealing with like a 20-year-old kid, it's like, why would you expect to be able to compete with that? Like, you wouldn't be able to compete with them in anything else. If anything, jiu-jitsu might allow you to survive, which shows you how powerful jiu-jitsu is in the defensive way. But this idea that you're just going to manhandle somebody, it's just not going to happen. But that shouldn't make you sad. Like, it's a weird thing where people think there's nothing wrong with the changing of the guards. To me, it's like your duty in life becomes to make sure the next generation is well prepared and does things as effectively as possible. And
it's
does
a circle better. Of life.
It's a circle of life, man. Nothing wrong with that. So, but it's keeping your mind in the game. Like you said, like the idea of, and that really does equate to, because we were talking about like, well, how does this apply to business? And I was thinking about this because, you know, sometimes when you're doing things like real estate investing, it can be boring. I mean, if you're doing it right, it's kind of boring. I mean, I think about like, okay, let me think about the most exciting deal I've done in terms of like kept my mind occupied. It's the one where I got sued. The lawsuit's still not over. I sold the note to this property almost a year ago. The sale of the property was almost 2 years ago, and it haunts me like a horror movie with bad sequels. So I guess that's exciting, but that was a terrible deal. Like the good deals are the ones where it's like, you know, you buy the home and maybe you do some renovating. Okay, that's exciting. Get to see things change. And then, you know, maybe you sell it. Okay, all right, that's cool. Or you rent it out. But, you know, I'm thinking about the ones where I fix it up and then I rent it out. And then it's like, I mean, I'll drive by it. Okay, yeah, everything looks good. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'll drive by it again. Oh, it still looks the same. I mean, that's it. Basically, I mean, if you're doing it right, it should
be. The best deals are uneventful.
So it's like, okay, so you're doing that and it's boring and this, that. It's like, well, okay, well, how do you keep your head in the game? And, you know, I've thought about this a lot because I've got this big project in Temple going on. And I'm like, but even that is like, they're digging rocks out. So I went there on like Monday. It's like, okay, they're digging rocks. Came out there Wednesday, still digging rocks. Come out there on Friday. Oh my God, they're still digging out rocks. Look at that. You know what I mean? Like it's not that exciting. It's an hour drive to see people digging out rocks. But I'm like, okay, I got to keep my head in the game because I need to look at this as a long-term play. So the first thing was to look at the other land around and made some offers. Might actually get one of the other lots. They're interested in selling. So we're going back and forth
Very
on that.
Nice.
Then I started thinking about, okay, well, what long-term picture, what else do I want to do with, you know, I'm building these warehouses and I've been talking forever about a law enforcement training center and I've been talking about a dog rescue. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll have space. So I have space for one or both of these things. I'm like, well, how would I, what would I do with that? Because, you know, our friend is now transferred to Temple in law enforcement. So it's like, now we have that area. Well, that's where he's going to be. So we should do the law enforcement training center there. Well, I'm building stuff there. Okay, so what would I need? And I start thinking about that. And then I'm like, well, it's right by a high school. So what's a big issue that we have right now? Like kids and police and not getting along. Well, maybe there should be some sort of, you know, kids can meet up with cops, do some of the training with them, go on ride-alongs, learn about what it's like being a cop a little bit more, reach out to the community. Start thinking about this with a dog rescue. I'm like, kids could come and volunteer, help walk dogs, learn about being a veterinarian, being a vet tech, being a dog trainer. Like all these different ideas start popping in my head. So I started writing out lists of people I need to meet and reach out to and all this stuff. That's keeping my head in different parts of the game and things that I've wanted to do that are all around this one location that can be done while I'm just waiting for like rocks to be dug out, things to be dug out. Along with doing the normal driving for dollars and kind of always looking for deals and things like that. But it's like, you know, it keeps your head in the game in terms of almost the same idea as when you're training people and you want that next generation. It's like, this becomes more of a legacy thing. Cause I'm like, okay, I want to set this thing up. Okay. If I'm going to do a dog rescue, I want it to be self-sustaining. If I'm doing the law enforcement thing, I want it to be self-sustaining. I don't want to be constantly asking people for money. How can I make this a viable business at the same time so that I can give this to somebody in my will, that I can, you know, make this something that it's not a financial burden for, like, you know, somebody, I die and my niece gets this thing. She's like, oh, this is so cool. Wait, I got to spend $10,000 a month just to keep this thing. This is terrible. I hate him. Like, you know, I want it to be like a good thing. So I think that, you know, as certain things change, the mental challenges change. And I think when people get focused on what was, which is maybe like in the deal making world, it's like finding that deal. And there's a big rush. And we all know this. You negotiate, you get that price, and you're like, oh my God, you sign the papers and it's so exciting. And you know, then you see progress, either if you're fixing a house up, you know, you've seen the progress, or you put that for sale sign and people are calling and all that. But sometimes when things are going slower, it's like, well, maybe I need to find more deals, and that's part of it. But also it's like, well, what else can I do with this thing that I have? Like, you know, like let's say you had that house. That, you know, the one thing that wasn't selling for a long time, it's like at a certain point, it's like, okay, what else could I do with this? Could I rent this thing out? Could I rent this out to a business? Like, who else would be interested in? And, you know, maybe that would spark something totally new and totally interesting that would make you go in a different direction. So, you know, to me, it's like, that's what's so cool about all these things, is that when you have the idea of sort of what is the opportunity that's there at this moment versus it's got to be this one way, when you have that blinders on, it makes things much more interesting. Because again, if you're doing real estate correctly, a lot of times, like once you set up that investment, you set up that rental property, I mean, there's maintenance and there's stuff to check, but it's kind of boring for the most part. You know, the thrill is getting the deal and doing this and doing that, and that's good. But if that's what you're constantly looking for, then you can put yourself in situations like I did, where I made bad deals because I like doing deals so much that I make a deal and, you know, oh, I want to do this thing. Oh, I want to sell this house. I'm so excited.
Just stay busy.
Just stay busy. Yeah. And that can become a real problem. Where are you doing this because it's a smart deal? Are you training because you have, yes, an agenda on something to get better at? Or are you just training because you're like, oh, I got to train.
Exactly.
And burning yourself out. You're getting hurt. You're sort of having mental burnout. And that's a, you know, having that purpose is really important, because if that fades away, that's where I think a lot of the injuries happen. That's where people make bad decisions, both on the mat and off the mat. Because I know that I've made bad decisions just for the idea of wanting to stay busy. You know, again, it's led to excitement of having a deal that's going on four friggin' years. That's still, I can't buy my way out of this thing. I can't, like, I don't even know. I think we're settling, but even that has turned into a whole thing. Maybe going to trial. So it's, and that was exciting. So I hope for nothing but boring deals from now on. I want boring.
Those are the best deals.
I want to talk to my property manager. What's happening? Nothing. Good. That's what I want. So it's, yeah. It's,
you know, for me, the way I've dealt with keeping my mind in the game, was, because you're absolutely right. the best businesses, if you're doing business correctly, then you should systemize it. And over, there's a lot of work to be done when you first start the business, lot of work to be done. And part of that process is going to be, you don't want to work in your business, you want to work on your business. So you're creating the systems necessary for the business to be self-sustainable, like you were saying. But you have to think about that. If you're successful in accomplishing that, well, that just means that your business is running without you. So you have a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah.
And that can be boring, right? So in the beginning, you're like, that's exactly what I want. I want to be able to have this ATM machine that produces money. And I don't ever have to really show up except for, you know, maybe part time, maybe less than that. So you have a lot of time on your hands. And now you get into this thing where it's like, you know, you don't use it, you lose it, right? And that's business is a skill. Jiu-jitsu is a skill. That's why you don't want to be injured. You don't want to be off the mat. You want to find ways to be creative. So the ways that I've kept my head in the game, when we systemize a business, I find a lot of downtime. So what I do is kind of like what our buddy Kevin does. If he's injured or tired in one area, well, he looks for another discipline to become proficient at, right? Yeah. And whether that be a stick, whether that be a knife, whether that be him, let's say he's never been in this situation, but let's say he couldn't move both of his legs. He would literally probably sit on the couch and dry fire his pistol, right? But he's going to be getting better. What I do, I take this same mindset towards business and I look for different ventures that I can start that have the same fundamental beginnings of, you know, is it low overhead to start? Minimal risk? Can I dissolve the business within 30 days if I decide I don't like it? And can it be systemized where the business can run without me? And if it meets all that criteria, then I start to, you know, take another step towards creating that business. And basically it's creating this other stream of income. But at the same time, I'm going through this entire business exercise all over again. So it keeps me sharp. And especially in the beginning, because when you start this new venture, you don't have any systems in place yet. They're going to be created, but you don't have them in place yet, which means what? You are doing literally everything. I apologize about that. You are literally doing everything down to the sales, right? Yeah. Which is a very, very good thing if you're in business, I think, because I think that that's the one skill that you should always keep sharp because that is the bedrock. That is the foundation. That is your guard, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, for business is knowing how to sell. And when I say knowing how to sell, I'm not talking, there's usually these negative connotations about, oh, that sleazy salesman. No, what I'm talking about is being a problem solver.
Yeah.
And if you've systemized your business and things are going the way they should be going, things are uneventful and you're sitting at home in silk pajamas and you're getting fat and you're getting lazy and you're not ready to defend your title. You got to stay sharp, right? So you want to continue to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And as long as you can solve problems, you can make money, right? I love it, my brother. That's good stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
150 in the books.
Boom.
Awesome. To check out this episode again or to look at our or to listen to our past episodes, go to thejiujitsuoflife.com. Also, be sure to check us out on Apple iTunes, like, review, subscribe, all that type of thing. Also, shout out to our sponsor, Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. Be you, be authentic, Robles. Robles makes custom gis, but you know what? Yellow Pine Investments, they make custom warehouses. Be sure to check them out. Kalem Kalista, check out Sneaky Submissions. Also, check out Jiu-Jitsu on the Go with my boy Steve Hordensky. That is a great training platform that goes right in line with what we're talking about today. If you're injured, you feel like you can't get to the gym, you can still learn, you can still get better. Check out Jiu-Jitsu on the Go. And last but not least, check out Nice Guy Painting. If you're in the Austin, Hays County surrounding area, they have all your painting needs covered. And I'm Mo, that's Carter. As always, guys, we wish you nothing but the best, both on and off the mat. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys.
That's it for this episode of the Jiu-Jitsu of Life. Your hosts are Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui. This podcast is brought to you by Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. You can subscribe to the Robles newsletter to get the exclusive content at robles.com. You can find more episodes of this show on our website at thejujitsuoflife.com. And you can subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we wish you a great week, both on and off the mat.